In a world shrouded in darkness, one man's journey from the battlefield to the front lines of a different kind of war is nothing short of extraordinary. Meet Craig Sawyer, a former U.S. Navy SEAL turned fierce advocate in the fight against child trafficking and the sinister forces that fuel it. Join us as we delve into the harrowing experiences, his mission to protect the innocent, and the chilling realities he's uncovered. This is more than a story. It's a call to action, a rallying cry for collective courage in the face of unspeakable evil. Welcome to the front lines of justice. Welcome to Craig Sawyer's world on this episode of Gold Shields. Gold Shields brings true stories from law enforcement, the military, true crime authors, and first responders. Experience the dedication, danger, and emotional toll with the heroes themselves. These gripping tales of true crimes, true stories, and true heroes are all here on Gold Shields.
It's Dan Murphy back again at Gold Shields with my partner in crime, Tom Smith. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing awesome, man. Amazing guest we got. Looking forward to this for a while.
Yep. And so do you want to intro him or should I? Because I got to tell you, to read his resume might take a half an hour. I don't necessarily want to do that.
I tried that last night. I started writing notes down. I'm like, I'm running out of paper. Yeah. So I'm not even going to go down a list because like you said, it'll take 2 hours. Craig Sawyer, an amazing military career, Navy SEAL, DEVGRU, the whole nine yards, and name it. If you can think about something a Navy SEAL does, Craig did it at a very high level. But even more important is what he's doing now and what became of his career and what he's putting into this project and calling that he's involved in, which we're going to let him get into. So, Craig, welcome to Gold Shields, brother, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, gents. It's a pleasure. I'm happy to share this time and talk about something that I hope empowers a lot of people against the very ugly harm that is being perpetrated against so many people that we love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, your tier one experience in the Navy SEALs, first in the Marines, and as a son of a career Marine, if I didn't give that acknowledgement, he's rolling over in his grave. But you took your skills and you have harnessed all your experience along with many others like you, and you have taken that to one of the biggest challenges, I think, in the world today, kind of an almost unspoken about shameful disgrace on humanity, isn't it? I mean, we talk about child trafficking, human trafficking, specifically children. Does anything get more heinous or evil than that?
I don't see what could. And I've made it my business for whatever reason. I was wired from childhood onward to go and combat the evil that I could identify. And, you know, when I was little, we were playing army and playing cowboys and Indians and all the different things. And was always fighting to promote the good, right? Fighting against whoever we perceived to be the bad guys as children. And throughout my military career, law enforcement, and now, you know, I've always tried to do that as best I could. And I have not seen anything worse than the depravity, the emptiness, and the pure evil of those who deliberately, systematically, and intentionally cause deep trauma and worse to the most precious, the purest among us, the children. And it's upsetting to learn about, but thankful we're able to, in this country, at least for now, we're able to still do something about it. And that's kind of how I keep my sanity in a crazy world is doing something positive against the very worst that we can identify. So there are some sick puppies out there doing some very, very dark things. And, you know, we've got to expose it. And by exposing it, we hope to rally a strong cultural turnaround against this evil, against this harm. And that's really the bottom line. Rally a cultural turnaround to where we can create, once again, a culture of protection for the children rather than one that's so abusive. It's really that simple. Now, getting there is more complex, but that's our objective.
And you know what? And we've met and had the fortune of speaking to so many Navy SEALs on our show. And the one thing that always impresses me is the giving back aspect. You know, I don't think there's one SEAL that we had on our show that didn't take what they've harnessed in their career in the over the levels that you work, and then take that into the after military life to give back in a certain way. So what I want to ask you, with everything you've done in your SEAL career, the deployment, I mean, like I said, we could sit here for an hour and just list things, but at what point was there an event? Was there a story? Was there something you read that went, whoa, I need to take everything I got and put it into this? You know, was there an event or it just like, hey, this is a really important topic to me. I need to harness everything I got into this now.
Yeah, well, look, I'd served at the very highest level of counterterrorist operations. Then I'd gone into federal law enforcement in the diplomatic community doing high threat mobile security for them, and the same for the intelligence community over the war zones. And I'd seen a lot of abuse. But it wasn't until I was back home in Houston, Texas, and we were burning some cigars together, a friend of mine, and it was an MI6 agent from the UK, a CIA friend that had grown up in our area, and guys from two other agencies. And we were talking about what was going on. And my friend from the CIA let me know that that area that we'd grown up had become the hottest epicenter of child trafficking in the United States. And although I'd been to 60 countries by then around the world, and I've served in six different agencies, I'm like, wow, that's, I'm exposing myself to everything I can. I'm fighting every evil that I can identify how to confront and overcome. And right here at home is this evil. And so I couldn't reconcile that with our culture there. I didn't understand how it could coexist. And they started letting me know how secretive it was. And I started realizing, you know what, they're right. It's so low key that the people that it's happening right under their nose, right next door to them in some cases, don't have any idea. And they're not looking for it. So that's when it came to me, okay, this is a covert operation run domestically here in the United States, but it's at industrial scale. And what does that mean to me? Well, nothing runs at industrial scale here in the United States without the IRS getting its hooks into it. Nothing. And I'm like, oh my God, we're being betrayed. We're all being deceived. This thing's being allowed to run at this level, destroying our most precious, our most innocent, our most deserving of defense and protection. And I just got sick, guys, in my stomach. I got so deeply upset. I don't want to over-dramatize this. But the way that I felt was like, evil had kicked me in the stomach. Like imagine some punk walks up on you on the street, slaps you in the face and urinates on your leg. You know, I mean, I felt that type of affront. I'm like, wow, you're going to come here to my home, my turf, and do this to the ones that don't deserve any of that. And it shook me. It did. And that was my life's turnaround. I realized who was I as a warrior if I wasn't going to stand up against that? So, I mean, it called to me very immediately, very loud. And so I started trying to figure out what I needed to do. And I realized from having filmed a special, a three-part special called Battleground Rhino Wars over in Africa for Discovery Channel and Animal Planet, that if you show the public through media a conflict of what's going on and a wrong that exists, you can rally more support against that wrong. So I realized from that model, okay, I need to make a documentary and expose what's going on here. We need to start prosecuting a lot of these crooks, but we need to expose it so the populace is also demanding prosecution. And then we can start changing this environment, which is very, very agreeable to it due to a list of factors, and they've all been orchestrated and perpetrated against us, like the science fraud Alfred Kinsey who went around in the 40s and 50s politicking to all of our different states, our law enforcement, our legal system, our psychological health care system, and our educational system, all with the sole purpose of normalizing, quote unquote, air quotes, normalizing the idea of child rape, like it's somehow normal and good. And a couple generations later, we've got an epidemic because we have people that are promoting this in our elementary schools now. And if a mom asks prudent questions on behalf of her children's safety and well-being about why her child is being secretly shown vulgar and vile pornographic material, that she would be kicked off of social media for posting, then we have bureaus, a certain bureau in the United States that calls her a domestic terrorist. Now, who's terrorized by a concerned mom asking smart questions, tough questions at a school board meeting? Why is that terrorizing anybody at the head of any law enforcement bureau in this nation? That should be a red flag indicator that something's deeply, deeply wrong with whoever says that of a protective mama bear, right? They should be championing her instead. So that shows you the deep agenda going on with it. But that's going back to that meeting. That's when the lights came on for me. And I realized we've got a serious problem. And I'm being sent around the world to defend our people against some boogeyman who may one day come here, when in reality, evil is already here. And it's been operating against our children for generations, and it's getting worse. And it's like some kind of sick joke I felt was being perpetrated on me to send me somewhere else to fight against something else, when we need to fight here for our kids, man. And that was just the practical solution that I came up with, is expose it. So that's when I started deciding to make the documentary Contraland. And it all kind of started from there. I ended up having to found an organization. We can talk about all that, all the opposition and the censorship, but that's where it all really hit me, is from that meeting.
You know, it's fascinating, and it's so true. And it's only starting now that the light is only starting to be shed on this multi-generational situation that's gone on. Throughout time, children have been always among our most vulnerable, the very old, the very young, the disabled. But the very young, who are so impressionable for the rest of their lives, are the ones that, if you're a man of faith or a person of faith, you have to recognize how important and dear they are to God. And he says those things for a reason. And if you see, as a police officer, we saw, and any cop that's listening knows what I'm talking about, you go to domestic abuse cases with children, they're so common, it's unbelievable. It's not like it's once in a career you go to one that's bad. Sometimes it's once a night, depending upon where you work. You see a child broken, completely abused and broken. And that is harmful to the soul of our entire country when we allow that to happen. That's an individual case by a caretaker, let's say. You're talking about the much bigger picture of the creation of an industry, of a global industry that makes a fortune by destroying, abusing, photographing. Every way they can possibly abuse a little child, they're doing it. And they're moving it right under our noses, right across our border. And now you're right, it's on multiple fronts. Schools, you go into a library in a elementary school, and you're going to find books that are disgusting. And they're put there on purpose. There's no accident. There's no reason why a five-year-old needs to be exposed to that kind of stuff. None. But they're there. And then you talk about semantics and words and the normalization that Kinsey tried to use. We currently have a push to normalize what they're now calling minor attracted persons. It's not a pedophile. It's somebody who just happens to be attracted to minors. This is the kind of stuff that is so sick and so twisted. And when you hear members of Congress talking about this kind of stuff, well, I mean, we have a broken, broken system in this country when it comes to this topic. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is really, you know, I have two grandchildren now. I mean, I don't want them growing up in this kind of world. We have to do something collectively. I'm so glad you are. And thank you for bringing that up, Greg.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the manipulation of language and thought is very calculated. There are think tanks. There are committees who come up with this psychological manipulation internationally. And they move a lot of money around the world. And they do everything in their own best interest. So Yuri Bezmenov, a Russian KGB defector, came to the United States and articulated to us very powerfully their objective to overthrow the United States without firing a single shot. They knew they couldn't beat us with tanks, planes, and guns. So what'd they do? They decided to break our culture, that which made us so strong and unbeatable militarily. Our industry was strong. We had a strong work ethic. We had a strong faith in our creator. We had a unity. We had a patriotism. We loved our flag, our founding fathers, and the freedoms that our nation gave. We loved how much we helped other nations, and the Judeo-Christian principles of love your neighbor like yourself, you know, help the needy, those kinds of things. We were proud of that, and we loved our nation, and we were unbeatable in that unity. So they decided that had to go. And so everything that makes our nation strong fell under attack. And I'm 60 years old, and we knew about their attack, and we knew about their playbook before I was even born. It was read before Congress, the Communist 45 goals. So they meant to infiltrate all our major institutions and turn them against the American people. Now they've done it. And so it's a matter of all of this moral depravity is calculated. It's being weaponized to demoralize our nation so that our nation could be then destabilized and then overthrown very easily without even a single shot fired. So that's why they're pushing this vile stuff on the children. It's to weaken the strength, the cultural strength of our nation. And if people don't understand why they would do that, just realize it's a military strategy. It's an international strategy to gain control over a nation, to destroy it and render it vulnerable to your overthrow. And that's why they're doing all these counterproductive things. So you can see the head of any agency or any political institution or what have you, if they are operating directly against the best interests of we the people, now you know why. Because they serve our enemies. They're being paid a lot of money. Some of them are under threat. There's a few different ways that the manipulation happens. Many of them are on video, raping small boys. It's one of the control tactics. It's a form of blackmail called brownstoning in the intelligence community. But that's what the Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein client ring was all about. And there are others. So many of these people that are betraying us, yes, their actions are destructive. And it's intentional. And we have to just kind of, I hate to insult anybody. That's not my intent. But we need to each grow up and face the fact. Because there's a cognitive dissonance. There, people do not have the moral courage to face this level of betrayal. The emotional pain is so deep. Many people just turn away and go, I just can't. And I'm going to pretend it's not happening. Just like the band on the Titanic as it was sinking, the band continued to play until they sank into the icy abyss, right? So let's get lifeboats out. Let's start saving our country. And we have to recognize what this is. So that's what our discussion is about today, is trying to alert the people to what's really going on, that we can face it and recognize it and go, aha, I get it now. And now let's set about bringing that cultural change to save the day.
That's awesome. You know what? I've seen those interviews with the KGB guy. I've watched them, and it is chilling when you hear what the KGB did in certain countries and in Russia. And if you go down the list, it's everything that's happening today, step by step. I mean, bullet point by bullet point is exactly what's going on, and that's what's absolutely frightening. What I wanted to ask you was, in your research, in your actions of what you've done, I know they're all different and I get it, but what's kind of the basic MO
of how these groups are working. Like, how does it, how do they get their victims? How do they get them out? Like, how does it work? You know, but because I think the education of how it works is going to help people. And we'll get into later your education part of what you're doing. But what's the MO? How's it happen?
Well, it'd be like asking a law enforcement officer, what's the MO of a criminal? You know, how do drug dealers do their thing? So it's complex. And there are a few different motives. So let's start with the sexual perversion. Some people are very sick mentally. And they are attracted to a small child who has none of the sexual features of a full-grown, healthy adult. So there's that aspect. There's the sexual perversion. Then you have the financial gain. Some people are after the money, and they will sell the child for the money. And we're talking about cartel members selling children, MS-13 gangbangers for the money. Parents selling their children, and even children selling each other, or even themselves in some cases, for the money. And then you have the political blackmail. Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, different intelligence community agencies capturing people, doing compromising things on video, and then they're controlled with that threat and that blackmail from then on. That's why you and I don't get what we vote for anymore. So many people are on video doing unspeakable things. And we have to really, as an aside, get back to better, doing a better job of vetting our candidates in any elected official position and judging them on their moral character, on their integrity, so that we can understand whether or not we should expect them to do a good faith job, just like you would for any other job. And we've gotten around that. That shortcut, that process has gotten shortcutted and circumvented, and we're getting people installed that are couldn't even run a lemonade stand, right? So yeah, with predictable catastrophic results. So there's that. And then at the very core of it, the darkest aspect of the motivation of this type of crime is spiritual. The way you have are people that want, look at it this way, from a practical, from a law enforcement perspective, you've got Joe Scumbag who wants wealth and power, like any criminal, right? Me, me, me. I want mine. I'm going to take. And I'll harm people to take whatever I, Joe Scumbag, want. That's what is going on in their minds, in their heads. But what they find is to be part of an organization who installs each other. We're talking secret societies. It's the same type of dynamic that John F. Kennedy warned us about very, very clearly before they murdered him. These selfish crooks want to be part of these powerful secret network. And their secret network, let's just say, has the governor in, you know, read in and sworn in and initiated in. And maybe the mayor. And maybe the chief of the police. And the priest or whatever. And they work to set up their own little kingdom where they can hook each other up. They can murder their enemies and get away with it because it'll be looked away from and brushed under the rug, and they can just get wealth and power and get off on that type of existence here. As low of an existence as that is morally, as horrible as it's got to genuinely feel down in their DNA, that's what they're wanting to do. Well, the reason these satanic cult groups exist and they're so prevalent is because they do get a level of power from the dark side. So if you look at it from a spiritual perspective, Satan is making war on mankind. He hates that God created us, and he's been making war on us from the very beginning, since Genesis 6 and the whole seed war and the fallen begin, you know, mating with the human females and breeding abomination hybrids and all of that stuff. That seed war continues. So if you look at it that way, Satan wants to motivate man to harm as many of our offspring and as many of the most precious and innocent as he can, which is the children, if possible, even still inside the womb, even before they can be born. Harm them, torture them, traumatize them, murder them. Satan apparently gets off on that because we're running into that with countless interviews now of the survivors of this type of abuse, that's the motive. Harm the children, traumatize the children, wreck their minds so that they never are healed and productive and find their creator. So that's the spiritual aspect of it. So the what they have to do to children is unspeakable abuse to be in part of these initiated into these clubs. And that's why I tell you that is you got to realize you've got let's XYZ institution, whether it's an agency or what have you. If it's acting in the complete opposite of what it's founded and chartered and funded to do, I would submit to you, investigate, especially their key leadership. And what you'll find is they're probably all in the members in a secret society club. And if you could watch what they do, it's going to always involve at least the rape, but probably the ritual torture and sacrifice of children. And that's kind of the price to pay to be in the cool club to get the wealth and power. Does that make sense? It's very dysfunctional. It's very dark. It's very foolish when you consider you're trying to jam your thumb into the eye of God Almighty, the Creator Himself. I can't imagine a more foolish thing to do, a more doomed future than harming the precious little ones. But there are people that are so misguided and so lost, they're so far from the light that they can't hear the truth anymore. They can't even see it. They're just lost. And they're willing to do seemingly anything. And that's what we're finding is this callousness and this uncaring and this mechanical destruction of the little ones. So that's happening. So now you'll look at different religious institutions and federal institutions a little bit differently when you see that, wait a minute, that's not what they're supposed to be about. What's going on there? Look for this kind of relationship, this kind of network, and this kind of activity, and you'll start piecing it together, folks, because that's what we've been doing. And it's all coming together again and again. I'm like, you know, as a sane, normal person, I'm praying for this not to be true. I'm praying, you know, like, God, don't let what we're finding be the truth, because the ramifications of that, how many little ones are being subjected to the unspeakable? But it is. And so we have to kind of recognize that. We've got to expose it fully. And by expose it, I mean demonstrate it like you would to get prosecutions in the court of law. Here is what's happening. Here is the factual evidence of what's taking place so that you can understand that it's real and someone's not just telling you on the street, oh, here's something that's hard to believe. No, we have to show them. That's why we film our documentaries the way that we do. Here's the evidence, folks. We're sorry. We know it's painful, but it's empowering. Knowledge is power, and truth is love, even if it's uncomfortable. Because look, if you guys are my doctor and I had a life-threatening illness, I would need for you to tell me. That may not be a welcome day or a welcome conversation, but wouldn't it be important if I intended to take action and save my life? And this is the same. Our nation, I believe, according to the Bible, will be judged on our collective actions, just like we are individually. The Bible is full of God drops the hammer on nations who behave in a way that's an abomination before Him. And I would say, what's worse than allowing, because we are a constitutional republic and we, the citizens, are responsible for running this nation. That's how our nation was founded. That's why it's so unique. So it is upon us. We are responsible to shoulder that burden of running our country, making sure our elected officials represent us adequately and not blow us off like they have been. So God judges us individually on our behavior, but He also judges nations on what we allow. So what's worse than allowing an industrial scale defilement, trauma, and torture and destruction of His most precious and innocent, right? So that's as high on the spectrum as I can get. So I'm kind of bracing for impact, hoping His lightning is sniper accurate, you know, because I don't want to get it, but I don't know how all that works other than we're in a place we don't want to be as a nation right now. We have a deep sickness. We have a life-threatening sickness to heal ourselves from, and we have to understand it first.
Well, the Bible is very clear that Satan is the god of the earth, and until Jesus comes back and assumes His reign on earth, the devil has a lot of power here, on Earth, and he's got a lot of ability to manipulate people, and a lot of people fall for it. And Revelation is very clear on what's going to happen in the end of days. There will be the beast, mark of the beast. There will be the deceiver. And many even believers will fall for the deceiver. And so you've got to be really careful. And that's why knowing the truth, which is the word of God, is so important. And it's not going to get better. The Bible tells you it's going to get worse. And then God's wrath is going to come. And then the end of days ends with the return of Jesus. I mean, this is all, he laid it out for us. He laid it out to the Apostle John. This is the kind of stuff that is, we know the end. And we know enough to know that it's not going to get better. It only gets worse. But to do nothing about it and to just throw your hands up and say, well, nothing I can do about it, it's predetermined that this is going to get worse, is not the way to go either. We're given responsibilities here. We're given expectations. We're given talents, skills, and abilities to use to the benefit of others. Love one another as I have loved you. Jesus gave his life for us. So what you're doing is truly living that out. And it's more than commendable. It is your great commission. You're living out what it is that a man of faith is supposed to do. God wants us to look out for the most vulnerable among us. Look out for each other, first of all, but especially children. So this satanic stuff, I remember, Tom probably remembers it too, being in the NYPD homicide investigation course. We had a detective that was an expert in the satanic ritualistic stuff. And he would come in and talk, and his name was Marcus Quinones, and it's been many years since I've even seen him. I don't know if he's passed away or not, but if anybody knows him, I wish him well because his work was very important. He would explain to us what to look for at a crime scene that might indicate that this specific child, which is the highest sacrifice to Satan as a child, right? Just like the burnt offerings used to be in the Old Testament, kill the fatted calf or sheep or lamb. This is their thing. Killing an unborn, unborn, that's a whole nother topic, but killing a small child is the biggest sacrifice, and there's a way to do it. Specifically, Anton LaVey and his crazy, evil people of the satanic world figured out a way to do it. And if you did it a certain way, it would show. So now, that kind of stuff happens. There's a lot of evil happening in other countries that's more blatant than it is here. But you guys are, is it just a national effort? I hate to say just. But you're focused on the United States right now with your group. Is that correct?
It is. And because we are the biggest consumer, the United States is the biggest consumer of child sex acts and pornography. So I realized, man, I'm done going somewhere else to fight against the problem. It's the children are at least as deserving. And so why go somewhere else? And it's most difficult to combat it here, because let's face it, I'll tell you, after 7 years of fighting this here, it's very difficult to fight this here. When I started to try to make Contraland, big tech started actively, and we could have a whole show just about the technical aspects of what big tech did, but several different big tech platforms really interfered with our crowdfunding efforts, and egregiously so. And if we could get it in front of a court of law, we could prosecute them over it. But I don't have any faith in the system. I think they're too connected. But we just tried to expose it, and then even with social media platforms, they censor the heck out of anything child protective. And one of our staff members just made note of all the hashtags that the Meta platform and Instagram disabled. So, you know, dozens of hashtags that dealt with child safety that don't function. So you could type it in, but it's not going to lead to anything else that's like that. So you can't track that subject, or people who want to safeguard children cannot network on their platform. So you see the active resistance against those of us who want to protect the children. It's very dark and very ugly and very sinister, but that's what we're up against, and just trying to overcome that. So yeah, it's the continental United States, because law enforcement, God bless their hearts. So many of them are trying their best. They're not a lot of them aren't really educated on the child sex trafficking. They're not really, a lot of them, legally supported up from their chain of command to DC to do much with this. They'll tell me all the time, "Hey, Simon, we're good at, you know, we pull over a truck full of dope or this or that. We're used to processing that. That's an old hat. We're supported in that. We know that game." But there's children in there. Well, that's kind of another thing. And if there's something spiritually involved, whether we don't even, you know, unless we got an expert on our task force or something, we don't even know what to do with that. So there's a lot that needs to be done. Our law enforcement, our brothers and our sisters and uncles and everything else, our sons in some cases, they are us. They're we the people. They deserve the support and the training to go and interact, not interact, interdict those who are harming children. Many of them want to do it, and they deserve better support. So that's something that we need to change. We need to give them the funding, the specific training on that, and you know, and the support, then the demand to do it too. And the more importantly, after that, the DAs will actually prosecute. Because I don't know if I'm welcome to say it on this show, but there's a certain globalist billionaire that's been discussed in congressional session who funds DAs' campaigns with these. Specific agreement that they will not prosecute entire categories of harmful crime, including child trafficking. So you can't tell me, nobody can tell me that that's not a glaring conflict of interest. Why would any elected official be allowed to be funded by someone who's hostile to our nation and with the agreement that they won't carry out their duties of the job that we, the people, are paying them and trusting them to do, right? So we've got some deep corruption and deep flaws in our system to overcome if we want to start empowering our law enforcement
we
to be the
name,
heroes
George
of the
Soros.
Day and start
George
really
Soros.
Dropping the hammer.
George Soros.
Child
George
traffic.
Soros.
Okay. Yeah. I won't say right. his initials, but his yeah. name is
George Soros.
I won't say his name, but his initials are George
so
Soros.
I want to switch
thing.
Gears a little bit and not, right, not too like much, it. But I want everyone to hear this very important story that involves your family because it's heart stopping. It's hard to even grasp, you know, what you're about to tell. So in the middle of Veterans for Child Rescue that you're getting together, in the middle of that, a absolute mind-blowing event happens to your family that I want everyone to listen to and hear. That maybe fuels you even more than you already were. So get into what happened to your daughter, Aspen.
So I had learned about child trafficking, and I tried to, for 3 years, to make a documentary, because I'd been working for about a decade in film and television, so I knew a lot of executives, production companies, and so forth. And they all shined me on saying, yeah, God's work, it will do that. We'll make that documentary exposing child trafficking. And they never did. And so finally, I decided to just crowdfund and shoot the thing myself. And then, like I said, Big Tech actively countered our efforts to crowdfund. And I was eventually told that, Craig, you're going to have to found a nonprofit org just to rally the funds to make the documentary. I'm like, wow, okay, so let's do that. And it was our family was under such attack at that point. I mean, you could say it's all circumstantial, it's all just coincidence, but and that's fine. But just a little bit of what's going on, you know, we'd been to SHOT Show, and you know, that's usually my job fair for the year. And I get a bunch of training contracts and different things and production contracts and endorsement deals from different firearms manufacturers and night vision and all these kinds of things for having been a Navy SEAL sniper and done a lot of film and television work surrounding the firearms industry and all that. And nothing, no jobs, no work, everything flatlined. And I was like, wow, because we were already behind. And I'm like, what's going on in this universe right now? And our baby girl, She was in high school and she had gotten hit a couple times in her car. We had big bills to pay. The roof went bad on the house. We had to do a new roof and like air conditioner and a couple of appliances. And I'm like, wow, what the heck is, what universe are we in right now? It's like a bad movie. And then our daughter just went into a downward spiral, and we intervened in her life very closely to find out what suddenly had happened to her. And we learned from all of her friends and teachers that she was just went into a severe depression. So we found a place and put her in for depression, that they could, a treatment center. And so they said, oh, you know, she was flatlined on B12. She needs, her body doesn't process her B vitamins well. So we given her some B12 injections and she's feeling a lot better. So after a month in there, she was recovering pretty well. And so, but we didn't know that yet because we could only visit her on Sundays. And so this was toward the end of the week and we hadn't heard that report yet. So we were worried about her. And then my sister calls me and says, it's mom, she's dying. And I said, okay, I'm coming, but we got to go see Aspen, our daughter, first to make sure she's okay. Tell mom I'm coming, but I've told her everything I have to say. She knows how much I love her. We're good. If she wants to hang on, please do. But I'm on my way and I'll be there Sunday evening on a red eye. So we got there. We met with our daughter. Anyway, mom passed on. And then Aspen had gotten out and she was home and, you know, deeply rattled, but we were worried over her. And I had put in the paperwork to found Veterans for Child Rescue, the official paperwork, that week. And then, and it's like pushback from the spiritual dark side, if you will. That's what it felt like. That's what it looks like now. That's what we all believe that it was. And then, it had been maybe 2 weeks since she'd gotten out of the treatment facility for depression when I was awakened. It was my wife, Tressa, and she sounded very upset. And she said, baby, it's Aspen. She's been raped. And my wife, Tressa, had been awake because she couldn't sleep because Aspen wasn't home. And I'd been asleep. And so she woke me up and I could hear Aspen screaming through the phone. It was distorted, but it sounded like a wounded animal. It was a horrible way to wake up. And so I woke up into operational mode and I started asking for cross streets. Where is she? Cause I'm coming. And my wife let me know this Aspen was speeding home. And I said, okay, what road is she on? Give me a cross street. I'll call sheriff's department, have them interdict her, make her safe, and I'll close with and get to her position, and we'll safeguard her there. And long story short, Aspen beat all the law enforcement to our home. There was a sheriff deputy here already, but they couldn't find her on the road before she got here. So she was deeply rattled. We took her to the hospital. And on the way to the hospitals, when she decided to fight back, because we'd asked her, you know, where she wanted to take this. And she said, oh, this guy is a serial rapist. He's got to be stopped. We can't turn away because he's going to keep doing it. And he's got to be stopped. So I was really proud of her for making that choice. And then we took her to the hospital, went through the whole procedure, the rape kit and all that invasive procedures, all the questioning, the medical testing and all that. So she, end of the story is she got him put away for 68 years and it took 2.5 years to bring him to trial because a soft judge here, and I won't say his name, but his initials are Javier Chan Lopez in Tucson, Arizona, was so soft on this rapist that he'd been let out numerous times. And, you know, he let the perpetrator fire 14 public defenders. So it's new case law. It was unprecedented. You know, you'd think that a judge, after firing two or three public defenders, would be like, hey, you know, it's son, because the guy was 34 years old. Why don't you just, if you can't provide your own counsel, you know, we just accept what you're given, because I mean, you can't keep just firing them willy-nilly. But each time that delayed her trial. So each time they delayed the trial, it traumatized her further because she felt like the system didn't have her back and wasn't going to allow her any justice. And she was just in limbo until she got this guy put away. So we, after about the third time, we quit telling her that the court was doing this. So the trial was very upsetting, and this guy was allowed to represent himself, and he was very disrespectful to the judge, and he narrated a bunch of untruth about Aspen to her face and to the jury and everything, and it was very, very egregious. But you know, the jury, you dropped the hammer on it, and guilty on all counts, including all seven counts, including the aggravating factors. So she testified very, very accurately and very, very well. And all the factual and forensic evidence backed her up 100%. So it was clean in that way. But meanwhile, when she was waiting for 2.5 years, she said, "Papa, I want to serve as a junior decoy agent at some of your operations." And I said, "Nope." And she said, "Wait a minute, hold on now. Don't you use young ladies about my age?" And she had just turned 18 at the time. And I said, "Well, yeah, we do, but you know, I don't want you around these predators ever." And my wife was telling me, "Well, her counselor says it'd be good for her to fight back." And I said, "Okay, yeah, thanks for that advisement." And my team members said, "You know, I saw him at it. It'd probably be good for her to fight back." I'm like, "Yeah, guys, thanks. Appreciate that." Not, and my own wife said, "Baby, she needs this. Like, let her do it." I'm like, "But I have to put body armor on her. And I'm not putting body armor on her and having her in the same room with one that she's one of these predators." She goes, "Well, you've got these other young ladies serving. Are they any less valuable or are they any more special than she is?" I'm like, "No." She's like, "Okay, think about it." I'm like, "Oh, you're smart. I don't like that." And Aspen said, "Papa, I'm going to do this with or without you." And I'm like, I know you're not kidding. And so I did, I prayed about it, and I did develop enough peace about it to go ahead and say, "Okay, we're going to do this." And she served very well, very professionally. And she's put, I think it's 9 predators away now. And she's good at it. And she still serves in our sting operations. And so she'll fly in from, if she lives in another state, because she lived in California for a couple of years now. She'll fly in to wherever we're operating and be part of the operation. It's neat to see them come for her, sometimes to abduct her or to harm her, and just see them get cuffed up instead. And that feels pretty good for her as well. So we're grateful for all that. But yeah.
What an amazing story.
Wild journey.
What an amazing story.
Yeah.
Wow. I'd love to meet her one day just because she seems like an incredibly remarkable young woman. I mean, coming from you and your wife, I mean, you've got good genes, let's put it that way.
Well, be nice. Toughness, be nice to her, Dan, when you meet her, because she'll prone you out, man. She'll flip you over, yeah. Kneeling on your head. I mean, we're all intimidated by her, man. She's petite, but she's got a force in her that you know, we're very, very nice to her.
Yeah.
I think God's given her like an extra gear. And it's inspiring. And, you know, when I go to speak at churches or, you know, events, people will come up to me every single time and say, you please tell your daughter she's our hero. And our daughter takes inspiration and strength through watching your daughter fight back so valiantly. And I'm like, man, I'm just so grateful to be able to provide that experience for her. Because who else gets to have their traumatized daughter as part of a, you know, sometimes 9 agencies involved in these joint operations. We've got helicopters overhead, we got drones, we've got intel, we've got highway patrol at extended distances and neighborhood surveillance and SWAT team, the canine unit, the takedown team, and all this together. And she's seeing all these people are in support of her, which is really, she's acting as bait. You know, she's not provoking the predator. She's just putting up benign social media ads, or not ads, profiles. "Hi, I'm Sally and I like butterflies," or whatever. And they're vicious. I call it demonic. I believe it's demonic. They'll come running, and it's so vulgar. The chat gets so ugly and so abusive so quickly. And they incriminate themselves many times over. And by the time they arrive, they're ready to be arrested. Sometimes we talk to them and let them incriminate themselves even more. Other times we just, the takedown team just intervene and just prone them out right there. Cuff them up and go process them. Let the next one come. So, yeah.
When Tom and I were detectives, one thing that the both of us, I think, can agree on is we didn't really ever want to work on our special victims or our sex crimes unit. It's when you have kids, it's a very difficult assignment. You deal with a lot of stuff that's just, it's tough to go home to your kids after that. But I also know some folks who've worked in internet crimes against children task forces around the country. That's amazingly eye-opening work to see just how many people are out there. Just how many men, mostly, obviously, are out there looking for underage girls for sex. It's not one or two in a zip code. There's a lot. I mean, they're busy all the time, which is really scary, isn't it?
It's 24/7. We demonstrated one ad that we had posted up in our documentary, Contraland. This was in Guilford, Connecticut. This is an affluent area right on the coast. A nice neighborhood. A local ad, so not a global, not even a national ad, a local ad for one 12-year-old girl. And in 30 days, 5,000 predators responded to that ad. And that ad was essentially a caretaker indicating that, you know, she had a 12-year-old girl that was available. 5,000. That kind of rattled that community. So, and even law enforcement, wherever we go, they are stunned at the depravity and the numbers of the predators that come for the children. Because they'll, you know, after the first two or three, they'll start high five and there's a lot of hugs. And they're like, hey, this is, we didn't know we had this big a problem in our county or our district. And we're like, yeah, it's everywhere. We're sorry to, you know, tell you, but yeah. And then, you know, after the first few start coming in after more, they're like, they're stunned. You know, so like, man, I got kids here, Craig. And I'm like, I know. And we should all realize this and do this nationally, clear this up, because they're stalking our children 24/7. And it doesn't have to be anything sexual that your child does. That's what people need to realize. It's not your child's done something wrong or acted inappropriate. Your child has just put up, your child may just be playing a video game, chasing butterflies or playing Army Man on a video game. And one of their friends turns out to be a full-grown predatory adult that lures them away or captures screenshots of them or talks them into doing something that they then scare them with and manipulate them with, and they end up in the back of a creepy rape van, never be seen or heard from again. So the danger is real and it's everywhere. And only by admitting it and taking collective concerted effort against it to safeguard against it can we change the dynamic that is right now, which is a totally permissive environment for child traffickers. And that's not okay. That's unsustainable for any nation. This level of immorality and depravity and destruction of your own offspring. Look, no species can survive the destruction of its own offspring. Just a math problem. But, you know, this is more complex than that. But that's the good news, isn't it? I mean, the good news, if you can't swing your coat without hitting something that needs fixing, then that's a wild opportunity, right? If people are going to sell a product, well, don't they want a whole lot of customers? Well, if we people want to do something good in this world, well, it's a great opportunity that there's so much that's wrong, because that's a chance for us to do something good on this planet with our lives, with our days, with our energy, and go, okay, here's something that's very obviously wrong, and let me see what I can do. Maybe I can donate a little money. If I don't want to put on body armor and go kick doors in, maybe I can donate and help fund it. Or maybe I can buy merch. I can buy my coffee from Vets for Child Rescue, their awesome organic rescue roast coffee. Or I can buy t-shirts or whatever. Or I can pray for them I could pray over this. I can get my church to pray over this. I can start a network praying over this evil, because evil is real, but its good is also real. And no created being can fully even comprehend its creator, let alone overcome its creator. So God Almighty, the creator, is infinitely more powerful than anybody on the dark side, because they are created beings and he is their creator. So we need to recognize the dynamic there and have faith and go, okay, we need to serve the Almighty and do something good and use his power and pray that power into this situation and help turn it around, because it does work. Prayer does work. And so there's a lot that we can do. Legislation with stiffer penalties. We need to get Soros out of our DAs and our attorneys general and judges. I mean, that's just an affection that we cannot sustain.
And you know what? One of looking through your website, which we're going to give again at the end of the show, but vetsforchildrescue.org. One of the things that caught my eye was one of the dropdowns in your education, warning signs, what to look for. That was, you know, the videos are great, you know, and all that, but you going the extra step of, hey, everybody, here's what to look for, I think is so important. And we mentioned it a few times on the show, just education is power. And you laying out these, you know, bullet points and drop downs of what to look for. Just go over a couple of things parents on an everyday basis, nothing dramatic, nothing crazy, just things are that right in front of you that you should notice. That
or teachers
help.
Even. Yeah.
Well, you know, the children spend so much time online through their smart devices. We, the parents, need to know what apps they're using. And there are problem apps that are listed on our website as well. Be aware of those and get those off of your child's phone, because those are the primary ones that we know that predators utilize to stalk your children. So know who your children are dealing with. Know who their friends are. Intervene to the degree in their lives. Be interactive enough to know who they're spending all their time with and getting programmed by. And so that's number one. When you see your child start to withdraw, if you've got an outgoing, gregarious, happy child, your child suddenly starts being withdrawn, there's a reason. Look into that, right? Delve in on their behalf. They may be in need of rescue. Something's causing them to change. If you start seeing them with extra devices, extra cell phones or extra money or things like that that you can't account for, make sure you find out exactly what's going on there. You know, you want to make sure that people aren't able to. Some of these apps allow the predators not only to surreptitiously capture screen images or even video of your child, but to geolocate your child, which means there's a dot on the map and it shows the predator exactly where your child is. So they can see not only which neighborhood or which house, but which room of the house your child is in. So you imagine child goes out to take garbage out or to go get mail or walk home from school bus. If the predator is able to stalk your child and track them, they can whop them over the head, throw them back of a creepy rape fan anytime they want. So those are the kind of things we need to be aware of, because it happens all the time. And that's those are the kinds of things, you know, any change in demeanor, change in like style, if they start getting really dark and gothic-y and, you know, that kind of thing really screams depression, you know, it's kind of a cry for help. Any changes really, I think it's the bottom line. It's look for your child. Anything that starts changing significantly, really spend some time chatting with them and investigating what they're doing, who they're hanging out with, so you can ascertain why that change is coming about. And if it's a negative change, then you've got yourself a problem. You know, it's different than if your child's going to church and they come back and they're holding their head up higher, their eyes are open and they're more. They look you in the eye and they greet you and they're more happy and they're reading their Bible or something. That's not the kind of change I mean.
Right, right. Yeah. Those are amazing tips. And to some, they may seem obvious, but I think parents have changed. Parenting has changed even during my lifetime. And the expectation of privacy the demand that so many children and underage people have. Well, this is my room, my space, my phone. No, it isn't. If you're a parent, it is not. You have to be engaged. Just the other day, we saw the sentencing of two parents of Ethan Crumbly for a shooting that he was involved in that the parents had every opportunity to stop. They didn't. They wanted to be their kid's friend. They want to be the buddy. You're a parent. You're responsible for your children. They are still underage.
There you go.
They are not fully developed in their frontal lobe. They're not making the best decisions. They are easily swayed by a fallen world. Be engaged in your kids' lives. Craig, Tom and I, you are a fascinating man, and we are so proud to now know you, and we are so thankful for what you're doing to rescue children. We want our audience to know exactly how to get in touch, how to donate, what the website is, what your documentary is, so they can watch that and learn more about this. Please tell us and make that clear. We want everybody to know how to get in touch.
Yes, sir.
You.
Our website is v4cr.org. That's V as in Victor, the number 4, C as in Charlie, and R as in Romeo, V4CR.org. Or you can spell it out the long way, vets4childrescue.org. That'll also take you to the same spot. Our documentary is Contraland, and you can find that in any search engine. It's also linked to that same website, but it's on its own website also, contralandmovie.com. So it's an empowering doc. It lets you know how we got here as far as this sickened culture that's permissive of child harm. And that should indicate to you what we need to do to reverse that. So we're grateful for everybody's support. We're grateful for your exposure here today, guys. You know, Tom and Dan, we appreciate the time, the airtime, and the law enforcement support. So it's important that we all link arms around the children, because they're worthy of our protection and they're in need of our protection. So here's a chance if people, you know, want to say kind things about what we do. You guys are this, you're that. Well, look, if you want to be a hero, folks, there's a chance. There's an opportunity right before you. And you don't have to put on battle armor, like I said, and go confront the bad guys, but there's something that you can do to help this bigger mission, this bigger work to safeguard the children. So just, you know, go to our website if you're not sure what you want to do, and just browse the different tools and options and figure out how you want to get involved and just make your own contribution. And I hope that it's a blessing to you for having done it, like it is for us.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Craig, for your time, for sharing your stories, for sharing this message, which is so important and has to get out there. We wish you nothing but the best in everything you're doing going forward. We hope to figure out ways that we can add what we can do to help with what you're doing, because I can't think of a more noble cause. Right, Tom?
You have a thought of what a show is going to be, you know, with Craig's background, but then you sit here and you hear it. And it's so impactful and so special and so in the need to be out there on everyone's lips, on everyone's mind, and for others to take action. You know, you may not have any kids, you can still help, you know, with a quick donation to support such an amazing fight that you're on. And you know what? I just wrote down, because I wanted to say it, you're a special guy, Craig, because taking on ugly is hard. It's easy to brush things off that are bad, that are ugly, that you don't want to be involved in. It's a special person to grab that and fight it and take it on. And you are, sir, one of those special people. So thank you so much for being here and getting this message out.
Yeah, well, all the glory goes to the Father, God Almighty, because he gave me the burden to fight for this cause. And it's the right thing to do. And, I ask, when does a burden become a blessing? Well, it's when you get a chance to serve the Most High God and something that he wants done. And that's why it's a privilege. So, man, I would love for this not to be a problem. So I think if we fight hard enough, maybe we can eradicate this whole thing, but at least try.
Amen.
Well, we will stay in touch with you for sure. We appreciate your time today. We'll have you back on at some other time, because we want to hear more updates about how your work is going and the things that you're engaged in. And I, you know, we like to pray for various things. If you have prayers in you and you're a praying person, even if you're not, figure it out. The big guy up there wants you to pray to him. Ask for his assistance in this incredibly worthwhile. It's an amazing problem. It's an incredible problem. And don't be afraid to look at it. Don't put your head in the sand. It's going on. Let's fix it. Let's find out a way to do something about it. And it starts one case at a time. Tom, take us out, brother.
Well, you just said it. I mean, you know, we say it at the end of each show, you know, pray for our law enforcement officers, our military vets, and our children, and the parents of those children that need strength to take this on. We say it at the end of every show, you know, just pray, put it together, put a thought together in your head, and get the message up to the man who is waiting to hear from you. So, Craig Sawyer, thank you so much, brother, for being here. It was an honor and a privilege. And like Dan said, we'll have you on because we want updates on this, of what's going on. So, Craig, thank you again. My partner, Dan Murphy. This is Tom Smith. One last time for Gold Shields. Don't forget, youtube.com/@Gold Shields. Hit that subscribe button, hit the bell, and keep supporting us. We love it. Thank you to all. Everyone stay safe. We'll see everybody soon.